When my family and I first joined our congregation in Connecticut, All Souls in New London, I knew there would be an invitation to join some committee or other, and I vowed to accept it and any other request the congregation made of me, a vow I'm still trying to keep. Don Norton met me at the coffee pot just minutes after the service that first day. She let me get some coffee first, and I found myself joining a newly forming RE committee. Later, folks at All Souls strongly suggested that a website needed reworking, a technology committee needed forming, and that I would make a good web designer and a committee chair. None of these roles stuck, but they have led me to some soul-searching and other roles which have. Speaking as a geek, website design isn't all that hard. The hard part I discovered is ironing out the differences between all the groups who have a say in how the website should look and what it should do. It quickly became clear I am no good at the politicking required in that post. Before I had that realization, however, I headed for training for help with the task of rebuilding our website. I went to a UU district annual meeting, and a class was given by a UU speaker on the subject. It was the strangest technical talk I've ever been to. She started by asking how many of us had ever invited someone to come to church with us. Did you know the UU average at the time was 1.2 times ever? Then she proceeded to talk at some length about ministry and proselytizing and the need to expand our congregations. Many participants left at the break, more before she finished. I stayed. Not because she had my attention anymore, but because I wanted to know how all of this was supposed to relate to the website. Aside from the obvious public relations or advertising mechanism, I never found out. I don't clearly remember how she got back to the subject of ministry, but I remember the exact sound of her voice. I remember every other detail of that moment when she looked me in the eye and she said that far more important than building a stellar website or being a good webmaster, that I should find my ministry. Those words have echoed in my thoughts nearly every day since. Being the geeky sort, I started with a dictionary, where I learned nothing. Ministry is the work, as doing the work of government, or doing the work of a minister. Could have guessed that. Delving deeper, I looked through some divinity school texts on the subject and dredged more obscure word definition sources off the internet. Over the years, I've come to a sort of working definition for myself, that ministry is to be a servant or to be a means. At our first RE committee meeting, Dawn asked me if I knew anyone who might be a good choice for our upcoming Our Whole Lives course, or OWL class. They were having trouble finding male facilitators. I made the mistake of saying that if they couldn't find anyone, I would consider it. Of course, the story is obvious from there on. I became the male facilitator for OWL. There are two topics that are taboo in our daily conversations. Taboo, in fact, in our private conversations at home. Society lets us talk about them in grand, sweeping statements and comments, but seldom, you know, or never in specifics on our own personal thoughts or experience. Money and sex. I had just agreed to talk to our teens about sex. Training for OWL gave me some deep insights into myself and a bit into other people. One of the first exercises was the obligatory self-introduction, with the addition that after telling our name and our UU congregation, we were to share our favorite word associated with sex. They gave us a few minutes. I was startled to learn that some of the words I thought were the most obscene are other people's most cherished words. During the class, I found I had several hang-ups, topics or specific words that I couldn't talk about without blushing or stammering. My classmates took no pity on me and called on me to discuss those topics and say those words at the most awkward times. After 2.5 very full days of this, I was starting to feel fairly natural about it. I was, again, reciting my hard-to-say word list over lunch when two ladies from a program going on over the same weekend at this facility turned from their lunch at a nearby table and asked what class we were in that would have me have to practice such an out-of-place recitation. They weren't horrified or even particularly embarrassed to join our conversation, and we talked about teaching our youth about sex and sexuality as a healthy part of life. They were pleased and excited to hear what a contribution we were making in the world. It hadn't occurred to me I was making a contribution in the world. In that moment, something shifted inside of me, like a cold lump melting somewhere inside my head. Junior high kids already know what you're going to tell them. Or they don't, but they don't want you to know that. There's lots of bluster and joking, and after a while, a few of them forget to pretend and start to show some interest, or at least signs that they're paying attention. My first class year was grueling. Some youth seemed much too young and others much too old to be in this class together. There were many sessions where I felt the youth paid no attention at all or got entirely the wrong message. Near the end of the year, one of the parents came to me and thanked me for the work we were doing. Her youth was one of the most sullen and most difficult to engage in the class. It turns out that same youth was getting the family up and out of the door on Sunday morning so she could be on time to sulk in our class. And I realized that I wouldn't always be able to tell when or to whom I was having an effect. At All Souls, we gave OWL to all ages, kindergarten and first grade, fourth grade through sixth grade, eighth grade through 10th, and finally to the senior high youth. After my first year in facilitating the junior high class, I went back to training for the younger grades, and in my second year, I facilitated K through 1. As we were meeting with parents to discuss the class and allay their fears, one mother took me aside to explain that her foster daughter would be in our class, and that the girl had been abused by prior caregivers and probably her own father. The foster mother and the girl's therapists all thought the abuse might have been sexual, but that she had never spoken of it. Their hope was with the adults and the children talking together about sex and sexuality as a normal part of conversation, she might open up. Her timing was suspense novel perfect. In the last 5 minutes of the last class, just before we served treats to celebrate the completion of OWL, she began to relate some of the things she knew about sex and sexuality. Her foster mother had been quietly sitting in the back of the room every session, just in case, and we were able to casually end the conversation and serve treats so that most of the children didn't know of the miracle that they had helped to bring about. I would like to unhear what she told us. I would like to unsee the look in her eyes as she started to talk. I'd like to never have known what terrible things people were capable of doing to other people, let alone their children. However, I will cherish the notion that by breaking down the social taboo and talking openly about sex and sexuality as a healthy and normal part of life and conversation, that I can help a child begin healing. Some years after teaching that first junior high OWL class, I ran into one of my students from that first year. She said she was sorry she'd been so difficult and closed during our class. And then she owed me some thanks for the class because now she was the person to whom all of her classmates went for advice and for help getting condoms. Echoes of "Find Your Ministry" rolled through the back of my head, and something else shifted inside of me. Like a flower opening somewhere in my heart, I had found a ministry, an act by which I am a means for others to gain personal strength and healing. As an analytical, my method of operation is to examine what works and look for ways to do it again. So turning back on my initial experience in the OWL training, what could I learn? Those moments of change in my heart and in my head, I think, are the key. I don't have a story of success for you here, but I know that I have felt the glimmering of such a change in my heart. And since I still feel a related lump in my head, I have work to do on the other taboo subject, money. In the last 7 years, I've been through a layoff, unemployment, the bursting of the housing bubble and the short sale of my old home, bankruptcy, and the attempt to modify the mortgage on our current home. Along the way, I've run into many people who've been in one or more of the same spots. What has continued to amaze me is that each person I've shared my woes and or lessons with has told me that they had thought they were alone. They hadn't realized that anyone they knew had been through the same things. I see that what there is to do is to keep sharing with people what I have been through and what I have learned. But that isn't quite in keeping with being of service, nor being a means. And again, maybe it is. I think I have a hang-up about money, or at least talking about it, which I have to get over, as I'd had to with sexuality. But I can't see it. So if you happen to notice it, please point it out to me. That's two things, and our reading said we needed three. The third thing seems almost silly after the two very heavy subjects. Coffee. When my daughter started her coming-of-age year, we weren't in a position to contribute much money. Remember my list of financial woes? So I got to thinking whether I had a way to generate some donations. I thought of serving espresso drinks between and after the services would be a fun way to make a few extra dollars for the coming-of-age fund. But I didn't expect it to be so much fun, nor so rewarding. My coffee ministry was born. Tongue-in-cheek, I suppose. Mostly I just provide a service, but I also provide a means. It doesn't bring in all that much money each week, but it brings it in 35 weeks or so each year for 3 years now. The shortest week, all I had to show was the $5 I usually seed the pot with. And the best week was over $60. Plus, on a few occasions, folks running special events have asked me to make coffee for their event, and either made a donation themselves or let the participants donate, and we've made over 100 on some of those. Money, however, isn't where the ministry is. There are espresso customers who come to me every week, and many who ask after me if I miss a week. I think I'm providing them some small service. The best, and the unexpected part, is that when I get a Boston Bounder to help out, it has been a great honor to get to know the Bounders while I coach them through learning to steam the milk or brew the coffee, and through the inevitable mistakes and subsequent cleanup. There have been one or two each year who take to it and ask to come back week after week, and a few who notice when I haven't got a helper and sheepishly offer to take the post. Watching them mature over the years, I'm thinking in some small part I've been helping them on their journey. It's better than any cash I take in. Most of that doesn't look much like doing the work of a minister, but it sure feels like doing a service and providing a means for others to grow. I'd like to leave you with some pithy set of rules to live by, a plan to live your life, but when will you use, so that won't work. But I will look each one of you in the eye and invite you to join me some part of your life somewhere as you travel and ask you to find your ministry. What is it you can do to help some other person find a little bit of joy, grow a little bit, or maybe start healing?